Okay, well, welcome everyone from Perimeter, from University of Waterloo, and you know, our special friends from the Vector Institute for Artificial Intelligence for this rare machine learning seminar here at Perimeter. So it's my pleasure today to introduce Mario Krenn to give a talk, Predicting and Inspiring New Research Directions with AI. Just word of introduction, Mario did his PhD at the University of Vienna in the group of Anton Zellinger, who many of us know. It seems that's where he got his taste for, you know, AI designing quantum experiments. And then Mario came to Canada for a few years to the University of Toronto, and of course the Vector Institute in the group of Alain Aspergutzik. So we were just chatting about, you know, how the pandemic interrupted that trip, and we never got him up to Perimeter. So, you know, a belated welcome to Perimeter, at least virtually. So now Mario's a group leader at the Max Planck Institute for the Science of Light, who some of us remember an amazing conference a few years ago in Erlangen, Germany. So he's building a group there. And with that, welcome Mario, and I'll hand the mic over to you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the nice introduction. And yeah, too bad we never met physically, even we've been so close. But I'm sure this day will come. Okay, so I will talk about how we can predict and inspire new research directions with AI and hundreds of thousands of scientific papers. And specifically, I want to show and explain how we can build semantic networks, or knowledge networks, simple knowledge networks in physics, and how they can be used to actually predict and hopefully then suggest personalized research directions. And I will show one concrete example for that in the end. So the whole project started with the question of how computers can actually inspire surprising or interesting ideas. And to answer these questions, we need to know, of course, what does it mean that something is surprising or interesting? And this is, of course, very subjective and depends on our previous knowledge. So the question now is, how can we get this previous knowledge into a computer and use the computer to analyze this data? So I was quite puzzled with this question for some time until I found a super inspiring article. This article is from 2015, and the authors are computational sociologists and biochemists. And they see research problems as links between scientific concepts in a semantic network or in a knowledge network. And specifically what they do is they build up a knowledge network of biochemistry. And in their example, or in their work, the vertices of their networks stand for biomolecules. And edges between those vertices are drawn when two biomolecules are studied in the same scientific paper. And then they used millions of papers and patents from the last decades and create an evolving semantic network. And with this semantic network and with some fancy statistical analyzations, they were actually able to find new, more efficient research strategies, or potentially new, more efficient research strategies for the collective biochemistry community. So they propose new ways how to actually perform research on a global scale. And I was super impressed by this idea because it shows how you can use quite simple methods and actually get some advanced semantic networks where you can draw advanced conclusions. And at that point, I thought, okay, I definitely want to do the same in my field, in quantum physics. So the first thing one needs to find out is how or what is the concept list in quantum physics? So again, in the biochemistry example, the vertices of the networks, the concepts were biomolecules. And there are huge complete lists of all biomolecules in biochemistry. But something like that doesn't exist in quantum physics. So the first question is, how do we create such a concept list? What I've done is I've used knowledge from Wikipedia and from physics and quantum physics books and from archive. And more specifically, to get a huge list of concepts in quantum physics, I used all titles in Wikipedia that are stored under the category quantum physics. So those are roughly 3,000 concepts, and they are of very high quality because they are human generated. As a second source, I used roughly 20 or 30 books from quantum physics and optics and so on, and extracted the indices of those books. And I added those indices now to my concept list. And this were then roughly 4,000 concepts. So now I had a highly or a high quality list of concepts in quantum physics. But those concepts didn't involve all of the latest developments, because not all of the latest developments are captured already in books or are captured in Wikipedia. So what I did in addition is I downloaded all papers in the category quantum physics from archive. And I used some natural language processing tools to extract key concepts from those 100,000 papers from archive. So now this natural language processing tool suggests concepts of the text. This is automatically generated, and of course, therefore the quality is much smaller than for those hand-created lists. But when you look through those lists, you can find and detect easy mistakes and kick them out to also improve the quality and get quite reasonable quality of those concepts. So now with all of those together, we have now this high quality human generated concepts, and we have this latest state of the art concept that have been extracted using natural language processing. And this together gives us a list of roughly 6,000 or 6,500 concepts of quantum physics. And these concepts are now the core or the vertices of our semantic network. And to draw edges between the concepts, I use a similar idea than what have been done in the biochemistry example. I draw a link when two concepts are studied together in a scientific paper, or specifically when they're mentioned together in the title or in the abstract of a paper. So with this, I use as a data source all of the 100,000 articles from archive, plus all papers that have ever been published by APS in the last 100 years. So this were roughly 650,000 papers. So together, I roughly had 750,000 of papers. And the APS papers, it was quite funny. I wanted to get all of this data source, so I thought maybe I just write to them an email and ask them, hey, can you please send me all of the papers that you have ever published in all of your journals? And maybe 2 days later, I got the email, and they said, yes, sure, here's the download link. So this was really amazing. So with this, I had now the concepts, and I had a way to combine the concepts, how to create the edges. And here I have a small example how the semantic network looks like. So here there are six concepts. These are interaction-free measurement, single photon, microcenter ferrometer, Leggett Clark, and so on. But now, for instance, there was an article in 1995 that investigated interaction-free measurements in a microcenter interferometer on a single photon net. So now in 1995, we get a connection between single photons and microcenter interferometer. And single photon and interaction-free measurement, and interaction-free measurement and microcenter ferrometer. Now, a few years later, there was a paper that investigated microcenter interferometer with Fabry-Perot interferometers. So we have now a connection between microcenter interferometer and Fabry-Perot in 2013. And another 2 years later, there was a paper that connected temporal correlation with Leggett-Clark and measurement interaction-free measurement. So we draw those links with the year 2015. And this on a general, on a large scale with 6,000 vertices and 750,000 papers generates the whole semantic network, the whole evolving semantic network. And here's a small plot of the semantic network.
Cool. Mario, maybe if you don't mind taking questions during the talk.
Yeah, sure.
Looks like Anna has something for you here.
Sure, that's fine.
Yeah, I thought I'd just jump in briefly because you started off your talk with this idea of something being surprising. So I was now just wondering whether your concept of a concept has to do with surprisal. Because my first thought was, okay, maybe something is a concept. If I knew everything else, then this one thing in relation to the other things would be surprising. But I'm not sure that's what you're thinking, so.
Well, that's a very good point. I never thought about it in this way. So I also don't use it in this way. This sounds like a much more elaborate way how one can extract concepts from texts. In my case, concepts are more like what you would find in Wikipedia, for instance, or what you would find in the indices of a book. What you say could be a very interesting point. Actually, as an outlook, I have a point that goes into how to create a concept list in a much more intelligent way. And what you just proposed could be one solution into this direction. So, thanks for the comment.
Cool. Okay.
So the whole semantic network looks roughly like this. This is a plot with drawn with Gephi, where all concepts that here the idea to how to plot this is every concept has something like a negative charge. And they would repel each other, and every link between two concepts attract the concepts. So you get a nicely separated structure when you de-excite the network. And what happens is that semantically closely related concepts will also be closely related in this representation of the network. And this is quite interesting because we can now look and do some sanity checks. We can zoom in parts of the networks and look whether the spatially closely related concepts are actually also semantically related. And here, for instance, there's one cluster where we have quantum contextuality, quantum non-locality, Bell's theorem, faster than speed of light. This is semantically clearly connected and all points into the question of hidden variable theorems and so on. So a different cluster can be identified here, where we have decoy state, BB84, quantum key distribution, and so on. So this is clearly on the application of quantum communication, which is definitely also semantically very closely related. So that is a very good first indication that what we get in this network is actually, at least in some way, meaningful and contains some meaningful information. We can do another sanity check or better look at the semantic network in a different way, namely looking at which of the concepts have been growing in the fastest way over the time. So here I'm plotting for every year, I plot one concept that 5 years before has not been studied at all, but after 5 years, it has been the most investigated concept. So these are basically these concepts that emerge and then are studied very heavily. And we can see, for instance, in 2018, the most studied concept, new concept, was quantum machine learning. And of course, as this audience knows very well, this was an extremely hot topic. Other topics are like boson sampling. Also, if you think back, there were so many papers about boson sampling during that time, which didn't exist before. We can also see a lot of studies of topological properties, and those properties have actually been awarded with a lot of prizes during the time or slightly later. For instance, the Nobel Prize was given for topological materials around that time. And maybe one of the most interesting thing in this plot is the evolution of the concept qubit. So here, qubit is the fastest growing concept in my whole semantic network. And in some way, if you think about it, qubit is a combination of quantum physics with information theory, and which forms the field of quantum information theory. And in some way, one can see that the field of quantum information theory has started and basically exploded during that time. One can also look at emerging connections. So which two concepts have never been studied together, but when they have been studied together for the first time, a lot of other papers started to research those topics. There are also a lot of interesting cases, for instance, edge states and topological phases, again, with topological insulator, topological material. One quite interesting thing from the photonic sides is the cluster state with photons, which has been a very important concept to generate, or to at least a protocol for photonic quantum computation. So what we can see is that the semantic network actually carries a lot of information that we can interpret and agree that they kind of make sense. So that is a very good sign. It means there's a very simple way to create a semantic network and knowledge network by drawing edges when they have been investigated, when two concepts have been investigated. But this can really capture a lot of information about the field. So now what we have done is we looked back into the history, into the history of quantum physics. Now, but actually what we want to do is look into the future and predict what will be investigated in the future. So one can reformulate this question and make it applicable to the semantic network. So one can ask which unconnected pairs of concepts will be investigated in the next 5 years. So which two concepts that exist now that have never been investigated in a research paper until now will be investigated in the next 5 years? And for predictions, a standard tool, of course, would be using neural networks. The problem is that this graph is huge. It has nearly 7,000 vertices, and this is way too large as a direct input into a neural network, because also the data is extremely structured. It's much more complex than a simple image. And so it's very difficult to put this as a direct input. But what one can do instead of that is actually create a number of features from the semantic network and use those features as an input to the neural network. So that could work in the following way. I have the semantic network, and for each unconnected pair of concepts, I compute like 15 different properties. Those properties could be how many papers contain concept one, how many papers contain concept two, what are the number of shared neighbors between concept one and concept two, what are the number of paths of length two, three, or four over the last few years of those concept pairs. So those features one can use now as an input to the neural network. And this looks like this. For instance, we have a semantic network from 2012. We can extract these unconnected vertex pairs and compute a number of features, and we put the set of features into the neural network, and the neural network should predict whether 5 years later these unconnected concepts, so these not researched topics, have been researched together. So this is a yes and yes or no answer. And we have actually the knowledge from 2017, so we can supervise the neural network. And by that, we can train a neural network that can actually predict from this feature list that comes from a semantic network basically 5 years ahead. And now if we have this neural network that can predict 5 years into 2017, we can also apply the 2017 data and let it predict 2022. Or we can apply the 2021 data, 2022 data, and predict what will happen in 2027. So with that, we have now a method to predict what scientists will likely research in the future. And the question is, how do you quantify the quality of the prediction? And as this is a kind of classification task, the classification into two different classes of yes, the concepts will be connected, or no, the concepts will not be connected, one can use as a metric the area under the curve of the ROC curve. And probably many of you know what this is, but for those that don't know what it is, let me briefly explain. So here you get a list of your predictions. You sort those predictions from most likely to least likely. So that means concepts that will be most likely researched to concepts that will not likely be researched. And then you look at the ground truth. That this ground truth, you check your first prediction. Has it been connected actually? If the answer is yes, then we go a step up. If the answer is no, we go a step to the right side. In this case, let's say the first one, the highest predicted one, has actually been connected. So we go up. Then the second one has also been connected. Let's say the third highest predicted pair has not been researched. So we go a step to the right. And so on. We go up and down until we reach the last value. And then we get a curve like this. This is called the ROC curve. And the area under this ROC curve can be used to quantify the quality of a prediction. So in this case, if you are on the diagonal line, it basically means you are guessing randomly. So 50% area under the curve would mean random guess. If you have area under the curve of one, that means the first part of all of your predictions were right and have been connected, and all the others have not been connected, then you have area under the curve of one, which is basically a perfect prediction. And in our case, we got a prediction of area under the curve of 85. And this 85 can also be interpreted as in a different way. So this 85% gives you, tells you What is the percentage of a random true element? That means the concept where that has been connected, that this one is ranked higher than a random chosen false one. And in our case, we can give this answer with 85% probability of being correct. Okay, so we see now that we can in some way predict into the future, but prediction was not only one of our goals. Actually, the real goal that we have is to find potentially some personalized suggestions what we should work on from this. And one of the motivation.
Muriel, maybe just pause for one question here from Roland.
Sure.
So I'm wondering about this AUC curve. So is this is this like only on the training data, or do you have like a validation set where you?
Very good point. I didn't mention it. I should have mentioned it. So this is, let's say, the 2017 data. We train with 2007 data. We get the feedback from 2012. Okay. So the neural network has never seen the 2012 data. So what we do then to get the 2017, we put in the 2012 data and predict 5 years later.
Okay.
So this is done with data that it has never seen before.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. So the actual goal is to get personalized suggestions, and one of the motivation. Except of that this would be really, really cool, is a huge problem actually in science, and specifically in quantum physics, and even more in AI. So the problem is that the number of papers that are published every month just grows. In quantum physics, we are happy the growth seems to be only linear, well, also seems to increase more in the last year. But in AI, the number of papers grow exponentially with a doubling rate of roughly 23 months. But this is crazy, because how can you still read those papers? That is basically impossible. So how can you keep up with all of the research that has been done? And if you cannot keep up with the research, how can you do your own research and get new ideas and wild ideas and so on. So basically, it's a huge problem that there are so many publications that one would need to know so much things to come up with real interesting interdisciplinary ideas. And a tool like this, at least that would be my hope, could go into this direction, that it sees the whole thing at the big picture. Maybe it doesn't understand what it actually means, but it sees that there could be connections that humans don't see. And then it tell you, hey, maybe look at this. This could be interesting. So, basically, an artificial muse that tells you, maybe look into this. Maybe it gives you 100 suggestions, but if one of them is good, yeah, that would be really cool. So that is the motivation. Now, how would we do this? First, if we just look at the highest predicted values from the whole data set, it's very likely that this doesn't contain any topic that we ourselves work on, so that we know it, so we cannot start to work on this. The best thing would be to use somehow some personalized concepts that we compare maybe to the whole literature. And this is rather simple with this approach, because we know we can compute or we can count the number of times that a certain author uses a concept and compare it to how often a standard quantum physicist uses this concept. And if we use this concept significantly more often than the standard scientist, then this probably means that we find this topic quite interesting. So this is a method to nail down the predictions or the suggestions to our personal interest. And I would like to show you this on the example of a specific concrete scientist. Namely, I want to show you this example on the on Rogers' papers. So yesterday and last few days, I used all of Rogers' papers, which are at least at the archive, there are 104 of them, and I analyzed them in connection with my semantic network. And I've seen that Roger uses roughly 920 concepts out of 27,000. So this 27,000 is now an update from what I've done, what we have published in 2020. This is a much more detailed concept list, which contains 27,000 concepts. So Roger has used roughly 920 of them. This is significantly more than what I have used. I've used roughly 500 concepts. Now we can rank Roger's concepts by his personal research interest, how much more Roger likes this concept compared to a standard scientist, a standard quantum scientist. And here are, I think, 20 of his most highest ranked concepts. So the first one is Monte Carlo. Roger likes this roughly 2,000 times more than a standard quantum physicist. Also, quantum Monte Carlo, Boltzmann machine, he likes roughly 600 times more than a standard quantum physicist. Machine learning approaches 400 times more. So those are concepts that Roger likes to research in. So basically, this explains his research interest and research direction. Now we could use the concepts that he uses a lot, so his research interest, and look into how they are connected to the overall 27,000 concepts. So basically the question is, which of the concepts that he's working on connected with one of the general concepts is highest predicted? So basically that's a very first step into a direction where we give personalized suggestions. And what I will show you now are concept pairs that have never been investigated together. At least they have, according to my database.
I love it. There's some questions. I hope they're not for me here. Kareem, can you go first?
Sure, go ahead.
Questions? Kareem Hassan?
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi.
Okay.
Do you hear me?
Yes.
Roger. Do you hear me, Roger?
Yes.
We hear you.
Okay. I want to ask about what is the fees of about there? There is a few waivers of any journal. I want to apply it my research or not.
You mean okay? I couldn't acoustically totally understand your question, but let me try to interpret it. You tell me whether it's correct interpretation. What happens with papers that are in journals and not in my archive database? Those I do not find. Luckily, in the field of quantum physics and machine learning, most of the papers are there. And this is anyway a statistical method. So if we lose a few, that is okay. Was that the question?
Okay.
Thanks.
But actually, this is a very important point. We can augment the data set by using something like I see Web of Science, and there are other huge collectors that collect all papers, and you can access them, or at least the metadata, also in an algorithmic way. So a safe way would be to use the papers that they have stored. But I don't have access to that at the moment.
Thanks, Kareem. Let's get a question from Skylar here.
Hi. My question is just, do you consider any kind of temporal function here? Because I would assume, you know, most researchers, their interests evolve over time. So like if Roger was doing a bunch of quantum Monte Carlo in his PhD and shortly after, and now it's focusing more on machine learning and generative models, is that taken into account at all?
So in this list, it's not taken into account at all. It's a very fair point. To be honest, I created this new database only in the last week, and actually I wanted to finish it until today. So actually I finished this only at 6 a.m. yesterday. So I couldn't get this in yet, but that's a very important point. Yeah, one can maybe restrict it or give them some decaying weight or something like that. Yeah, that's a very good point. So
one more question from Anna.
Yeah, I thought I'd just jump onto that because connecting what we were talking about before and this idea of dynamics, because I was thinking, okay, so if you think about, let's say, surprisal in this relational way, then let's say we quantify that literally by the number of connections, then we just end up getting this, these dynamics, because if we have information flow along the connections, then we end up reaching some sort of equilibrium once it becomes too connected. I think dynamics follows very naturally.
Yes. So the connection rate here is roughly, I think, 3% of all of the concepts are connected, or 5% roughly like this. So we are not at the state where everything has been researched together yet, but it very much depends also on the concept list. Then the dynamics is highly important, because first, of course, the whole network evolves. Also the concepts, they should evolve, the personalized concept should evolve. Also with new year, new concepts emerge. So there's a lot of dynamic going on. But the surprise, I wanted to mention it very briefly in the end, but let me mention it here. Actually, when we can predict something, that would in some way mean that it's potentially not so surprising. So actually, prediction could be interesting, could be a metric for what might be feasible or something, but it is definitely not the only thing that we should take into account for personalized suggestions. So that is a very important point, and one that I'm not sure yet how to solve. I tried to find, for instance, anomalies in the network. So what concept pairs are in some way anomalous in this whole network and maybe connected to your own research. But it's very unclear yet how to get surprisingness. So if you have ideas either now or later, definitely let me know. I'm very interested in this.
Cool. Yeah, because I guess it's also so different whether you view it from the perspective of one scientist or if you're looking at it from the dynamics of the whole network. That's very different.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is for sure true. That's why I said in the very beginning that what is interesting and surprising is highly subjective. And maybe as a collective surprisingness just means that the individuals agree that it's surprising. That's a very, very good point.
If you don't mind, one more question, maybe from Charlie here.
Sure.
Hi, I was just wondering how you are trying to deal with the generation of new concepts. So, you know, not all of these words existed 20 years ago, let's say, or at least not nearly as common. Like, how do you deal with the fact that new words and new concepts get created?
Yeah, that's also a very good, very difficult question. There are maybe two ways. So concepts that exist right now, I see, and I can have it in the evolution. They are just vertices that are not connected to the whole network. Concepts that exist in the future, slightly more difficult, but it's also actually possible. And in network theory, this is called the vertex prediction task. So what I'm doing here is solving the link prediction task, so which links will be drawn. But there is also a task that's called the vertex prediction task. And that goes much more in that direction what you just said, which new vertices appear and how are they connected to the other parts of the networks. And if you imagine now that you have a new vertex that appears somewhere between, I don't know, quantum key distribution and entanglement, if there's a new vertex that appears there, you wouldn't even need to know what the name of the vertex is, but you still know something about the semantic meaning, because you know where it is in the semantic network. In this way, one can actually or could actually predict which concepts will appear and what are their semantic meanings, at least theoretically. I didn't try it. That is definitely on my to-do list because that sounds super cool. But it's also very difficult, I guess.
Maybe one more quick question from Hillary, and then we got to move on because I got to see the next slide to know what I'm working on next.
Okay, well, this one might be one of those really unhelpful questions that kind of spirals, but it causes all sorts of things. What do you do when a concept is not well defined at the beginning of people looking at it, and part of what happens in the research is that it changes? Now, there's a lovely stinker of this happening now, right? Well, it's kind of not exactly in Roger's area of interest, but it's close. And that's the experiments to try and find Majorana fermions. Uh-huh. And there was this lovely opinion piece by Frolov in Nature fairly recently, talking about all the hype and all the false detections and all the lack of reproducibility. Yes. And there was a bad smell about some of the data. I won't say more than a recorded thing. But, you know, there was this early thing by theorists about, oh, yeah, you can make Majorana fermions and do all this cool stuff. And then the experiments didn't work. And then the theorists uh-huh. came back and said, oh, by the way, there's a bunch of other things that can mimic Majorana fermions but aren't. Uh-huh. Right. And the whole train wreck is ongoing. And I don't think its concepts are terribly static. How do you deal with that when your concepts are changing?
Yeah. Okay. So this is an extremely difficult question. And this is actually one where I don't have a good answer. I thought about these problems from time to time. But for this question, I don't have a really good answer. Maybe one can chop the semantic network in time and actually, well, maybe you can see how the connections of this concept change in the semantic network. If you assume that everything else is static, then you could kind of see how the meaning of that concept evolves. If everything moves, then it's very, very difficult.
Right. Okay. Well, if we pin it down to something that's a bit easier for a computer to grasp, what do you do if a paper is retracted?
Yeah. Yes, that is actually a thing I didn't think about. That's a very good question. This goes then into the really dirty details of how practical science works.
Right, because there was a key experimental paper on this Majorana thing that was retracted, and there was a row about it.
Yes, I mean, the concepts are still connected. I think the big problem here is that the weights in my network are integers that count, or that gives basically the number of papers that have connected these concepts. You can think about more clever weights. For instance, in my case, you would not know whether the paper said those concepts have nothing to do with each other or whether they are closely related. So the semantic meaning directly from the text is entirely missing here. So you would need additional structure of the edges to capture this. Some simple ones is this negation, but what you just said, this could go in the direction of negation. Yeah. Certainly also a very important and very difficult question. So as you see, a lot of things are open here.
I love the audience participation, but I think we have to give Mario a chance to actually finish his talk roughly on time here. So Mario, why don't you continue and we'll save the rest of the questions till the end.
Yes, sure. So the last thing then, what I want to show is actually what are some of the prediction of Roger's future work. So here I have some concepts. The first concept is from Roger's research interest, and the second one is in general quantum physics. Now those are concepts that are highly predicted, that to the best of my knowledge and to my network's knowledge have not been investigated together, but it says it will definitely be investigated by, in this case, 2024. So a connection between quantum phase transition and hidden variables. I have no idea whether anyone has ever investigated, of course, entanglement, but at this different level of thinking about it in the context of hidden variable theories and so on. At least my network would suspect that this will be investigated very soon. Also, some other predictions that I found quite interesting was finite temperature in a quantum network. Not necessarily, so when I see this, as a scientist, you need to interpret it. And I interpret it as what would be if you have really huge excitations in this network, not on a physical level, for instance, but maybe on an information level. So how could that be connected? So the idea here is that those are things that are highly predictive, and what you ought to ask is then to try to interpret how that would make sense. Does that make sense? So I am not sure about Roger's research directions, but for my own lists, this gave me from time to time suggestions that I would never have thought about, but when I thought about it, it really triggered me into some certain directions. Other thing, as I said, predictions are possibly not the most surprising thing. Actually, it's potentially the most unsurprising thing. So one can actually try to see what are unorthodox connections that are predicted. So, for instance, what is quite unorthodox but highly predictive is Bose-Hubbard model with single photon detectors. Those concepts are far away, so semantically far away. You can use for that some network theoretical measures, and also their degree centralities are quite small. But those are anyway highly predictive that they will be studied together. Or, for instance, a triangle lattice, so a certain lattice structure with Markovian open quantum systems, to the best of my knowledge, not investigated. Or scale invariants in optical quantum information. The other question is, what is highly unpredicted? So what does my network think will definitely not be investigated? And again, the first word comes from Roger's research interest. The second word is general quantum physics. So I had to look actually up what the confined quantum critical point is yesterday. And my network says that this will certainly not be connected with Casimir density. But just when you see those words, at least for my research topics, I got in several times inspired to think about a direction that I would certainly not think about otherwise. Okay, so these were the suggestions, and because of time, I think I skip the rest. It's not so important anyway. Let me say it in one sentence. We made a competition where we gave €26,000 prize money to build really good machine learning models to solve this prediction task in this exponentially growing networks. And to my delight, we got 72 submissions. Those involved graph neural networks, transformers, CRACI was a pure network theory solutions and automated feature generation. So it was super interesting to read what other approaches one can have to predict the future states. And actually, also, we got one submission from Canada, from Graham's group. That was really cool. Yes, so if you are interested in this, next week at the exact same time, there's a concluding special session on this. And the talks will be on YouTube and also. Okay, now let me come to a conclusion. I showed how one can predict in some way what future research direction will be investigated using a semantic network in combination with neural networks. And we already talked about a number of future directions. So how can you actually get this concept automatically? How can you actually make these personalized suggestions really good? This is at the very, very first level. Would find it really, really interesting to get this done. And if you have ideas, please go ahead and send me some message. Then maybe as a very last thing, two more general questions is, how does actually a human scientist define your research directions? Is it in some way unlike here, or is it completely different? And let's say you have a really incredible tool that can give you research suggestions. How would you actually evaluate this tool? Because in order to execute the research, this takes months or years. So how do you know that actually your inspiration came from such a tool? That's also potentially a difficult question. Yeah, many other questions, but I think that's a good point to start. Thank you very much.
Amazing. Thank you, Mario. Okay, questions? Okay, I see Kareem Hassan. Go ahead.
Okay, I want to study for a first time a connection between network science and quantum physics. Could you give me a name of textbook or a notes to read it?
Let me think. Potentially, this could be done by building one semantic network that's solely from quantum physics, one that is solely from network physics, take papers and then see which new connections could appear. So potentially one can use this to combine fields. What I think is potentially more useful is connect the research interest of individual scientists. So you have two scientists, then you take all of the key concepts from the one, all of the key concepts from the other, and look which one are highest predicted or which new ones might be surprising. So this goes both kind of in the direction of your answer, of your question.
I want to ask you about, could you give me as a recommendation, could you recommend a names of research papers or textbooks or books?
This is what you mean. I thought, why am I told? Yes.
Recommendation.
Yes. At the website of the competition, I listed, I think, three reviews, and this goes all under the umbrella of science of science. And probably the most interesting book is, this book, if you can see it, it's called
The Science of Science. I cannot see you.
Okay, it's called, if you send me an email, I can send you the reference. It's a book by Albert Laszlo Barabasi, who is a super famous network theorist, and Dashun Wang, who both are pioneers in the field of science of science and network theory applied to research.
Okay, thanks.
Graham?
Super cool work, Maria. I have so many questions, but I'll only ask one. So kind of a contrarian question. I'm at NeurIPS this week, going to like so many talks. There's so many papers, just like so much information, so many things I'm excited about. And my problem is always there's too much of it. So I kind of wonder if what we need more is like elimination as opposed to generation of new ideas. Like, cause I, you know, there's just so many things you could potentially work on or sort of try to get your students interested in. Should we be thinking about sort of cutting things down, or can this method cut down on the noise?
Well, I think it can actually. And that was actually my motivation. Because there are so many papers, and at some point you don't know, and you can only focus on your own research direction. So I think this is a way how one can find ideas that you would not find yourself, because you are focused mainly on your own research direction, but this tool could potentially give you more interdisciplinary ideas. And if you're interested in more interdisciplinary ideas, I think such an approach, if it is much further developed, of course not now, but if this would be much further developed, I think this could actually go in this direction to cut away all of the, maybe let's call it local ideas, and give you more global ideas that, depending on your research interest, could then be interesting for you. But I think the answer is clearly yes, at least my hope is clearly in this direction.
Thanks, Graham. Skylar?
Yeah, so my question, you might not have an answer because I think it's related to a lot of this future work that you're talking about, but I think when you showed the graphical, like visual of your network, it's pretty clear that they're, like you said, there are these clusters. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if you have any kind of mechanism that encourages the exploration of connections between these clusters, because I mean, I'm sure a lot of us can come up with great examples of these like cross-field collaborations that are really fruitful. Mm-hmm. And so I was just wondering, what's going on there?
I see. So maybe the easiest method would be to identify one core physicist from the one cluster, identify other core physicists from the other cluster, and use the concept list of those two and try to find what might be predicted. So this is the simplest thing where you don't need to do anything except to find one person that is very prominent in those clusters. That could be done in 1 hour with this code that exists already. If you want to spend a little bit more, you can think how to identify the boundaries of clusters, then get those concepts, identify the boundary of the other cluster, and then you have much more direct comparison. So that should definitely work. And you can also choose how far you want your clusters to be away. You can have close by clusters. You can also have clusters that are crazy far away and see what happens there. So there are so much things one could do. I didn't come to this, but that sounds actually very interesting. Look at the clusters. Didn't think about this yet.
Thanks, Skylar. Charlie?
Hey, thanks for the really cool talk. So this might be a little strange of a question, but so these neural networks, for example, will get to know each personalized suggestion and what a particular person is interested in. Could you ever see this being used to suggest collaborators, almost using it like a science social network? Or I feel like that could be interesting.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So at the moment, I don't have any, let's say, soft information inside, like I don't have the scientists, I don't have institutions, I don't have citations and so on. But one could identify, well, you need to, for instance, let's take the example from before. You choose two clusters, that you are your own cluster, and you say you want to work roughly in this direction. Then with such a tool and with this data, you can certainly identify people that could work in, or that, that might work in this other cluster, and then suggest topics that you find interesting and the other might find interesting. And then if there's something that really strikes you, you can just contact the other person. So that it should be possible. It's not here yet because I don't use actively this data, but it's in the data set itself.
Cool. Thanks, Anna.
Yeah, my question goes in a similar direction to Charlie's, actually, because I've also been thinking a lot about this idea of science social networks, but more if we move away from like the individual perspective. Mm-hmm. And think more about like echo chambers and these things.
Oh.
Is it like, of course, echo chambers is a negative word, but at the same time, it can also sometimes be positive to not connect to groups of people and have them for like a finite amount of time think about things on their own, and only after that separation bring them together. So, of course, this is not thinking about connections of concepts, but more connections mm-hmm. of groups of people. So it's distinct from what you've been working on, but mm-hmm. Connection is not always, I think, the best step to take.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of social science for sure on this, but I thought I'd just throw it in there.
Yeah, so I didn't work on anything like this, but I read a number of articles on this, and actually this whole field started with computational sociologists, basically. Network theorists and computational sociologists, because they were interested in studying science as so science is the database, and they study how science works. And then only later, using this knowledge networks came out. So I'm sure the computational sociologists looked in at least related topics.
All right. Thanks, Anna. Roland, then Ray, then Andrew. Roland?
Yeah, this was a very cool talk. Thank you so much. I was wondering about, because now you use this like semantic networks, but like how easy would it be to create also like citation networks for the same papers that you crawled all these concepts from, and then sort of combine the two? Because then you could sort of see like, oh, these people are on their little island, but they should actually be talking to those people because they're kind of working on similar things. Like, is this mm-hmm. possible, you think, or would it be complicated?
That's a very good point, actually. I'm sure something like this exists as islands. From the data set that I have, this is citation information is not included because I use the whole corpus of archive without citation information, but you could go using Web of Science. They also provide access, and they also give you citations. So there you could combine this. And actually, if you look here at future work, the third point, talks about citations actually mm-hmm. in a slightly different way. I wanted to know whether one can actually predict the number of citations, for instance, or some other metric of success, because I only predict what will be connected. You could predict what will be often connected. The question is, could you also predict citations? So then imagine you have a suggestion and the tool tells you, okay, you combine those two, it's likely highly cited. I don't know, that could be interesting.
Right. But so is there like an open source data set of archive connections?
Yeah, so of the archive toolbox is, or the archive data set is open. You can go to Kaggle. You can find the link when you go to the archive page and read, I think it's called Robot BRV or something. They give all the links. Citation information is not freely available, to the best of my knowledge. But I think my subscription via libraries.
Cool. All right, thanks.
Thanks, Roland. Ray?
Very interesting talk, and kind of brings a lot of things to think about. Have you thought about looking at difference between subset of fields in science, for example, theory and experiment, and see do you have the same kind of structure? And also things like new fields or relatively new field like quantum information and condensed matter, would they have different structure? Is one easier to predict, make predictions?
That is a very good question. I didn't look into it. I know there's some work that looks into the structure of topics that are just emerging, and they have some predictable patterns, most of them. But I think at the big scale, as you just mentioned it, probably I haven't seen any of that. And yeah, but certainly sounds interesting, especially experiments versus theorists.
And now we'll make some bet on Roger's research in the coming years.
Yeah. So one dangerous thing is the potential of self-fulfilling prophecies, which I didn't mention. I didn't want to open this, but now that you mention it, so if you and I are betting and you say it will not happen, then I will write a paper about it.
So we'll see in the future what Roger does.
Yes.
Or how much we can influence him on his research by...
Yes. So this could really be potentially problematic if it is not done right, because instead of my goal of making much more diverse, at the global scale, much more diverse research topics available, it could narrow down the focus. For instance, when you have a tool that tells you this topic, if you work on it, is highly cited, and then groups at the same time start to work on this instead of working on different things. So, yeah.
And I wouldn't like administrators of a university to get that data and decide to kind of make people do certain things because of predictions of models.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the question.
I love that. And Skylar made a good point in the chat. Using this tool for harm, misguiding your competitors. I assume that's not what's going on here, Mario. But sorry. Yeah. One more question. Andrew.
Yeah, thanks a lot for a great talk. That was so interesting and fascinating. I just have a relatively simple question. Do you think this tool could have been used, to predict some of the revolutionary developments in the past? For example, this is going to sound very primitive, the birth of quantum mechanics. I mean, and now we can look with, with the hindsight of, 100 years after sort of what we consider now the birth of quantum mechanics, we can look with, I think some a deep set of eyes at this, and we call a lot of these developments, we use certain terminology to describe these developments now 100 years later, and sometimes we might think that the birth of quantum mechanics, for example, was akin to a step function, very revolutionary just in the moment, but obviously was building on a lot of concepts and ideas and experiments of the past. And so, if we think about classical mechanics, after that, you've got the quantum revolution. Can this tool kind of be used to make predictions about where the next revolution will come from? Because science is never settled. We're always going to keep learning. And so I'm curious, I guess on two fronts, if we took all the papers from the end of the 19th century, early 20th century, what would this tool have predicted then? And can it be used, from this sort of upper level, high level, revolutionary perspective?
Yeah, that's an extremely important question. So at the moment, as it is now, it's only predicting links. You can definitely train it to predict different things like what is highly growing and so on. One problem, even if the tool suggests you, hey, look at this, this will be very important, it still doesn't tell you why it is actually important. So there's still the the human that needs to interpret those suggestions at the moment. So at the moment, I give two concepts to connect them. If it had the possibility to give more more nuances and maybe more concepts and potentially also say how they are connected, which goes back to adding different information at the edge that are different than just the number of co-appearances, then this could go into such a direction. Now, question is, for the revolutions, we don't have too many training data points. So maybe small revolutions, if we have a few, or highly cited and very influential papers, potentially this is possible in the future.
Right.
These very revolutionary things, they are, yeah. I'm not sure.
Right. Yeah. No. It's super interesting, and yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, the one last thing, one last comment. You talked about vertex prediction tasks, right? You were talking about the different types of prediction tasks, link prediction and vertex prediction theory. And I mean, would this be along the lines of vertex predicting, you know, prediction of a vertex prediction prediction task in the sense of, well, what new vertex will appear? What new concepts will appear? Is that related to this or?
Yes. So it would be, that's a good question, whether it's a vertex or a link prediction task or a combination of it. But right. For sure, the information that is at the moment in the semantic network is not sufficient to go anywhere close to what you have in mind for the revolutionary things, because the human still needs to interpret it. And right. If the human just doesn't know how to interpret it, I mean, there's no chance that you get this revolution. But if there's more information, then potentially it could go closer to what you have in mind.
So we need 1,000 years, tens of thousands of years worth of possible revolutions for new data points, and then we'll come back.
We can start slow and predict the 10 most cited papers or something like that, and the topics, the content of this paper, that would right. already be good. That's a lot of training data.
Here's
and that would be useful.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. I think it's a great place to maybe end the formal part of the talk and the recording. Mario, based on the amount of audience participation, this has been one of the best talks I've seen at Perimeter in a long time. Thank you very much. And thank you for the personal inspiration. Everyone give Mario a round of applause and we'll stop the recording here at least. Thanks so much, Mario.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.